KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm David Hyde. Harvard biologist George Church started the Personal Genome Project, and he has a new book out about the emerging field of synthetic biology. In the future, he says, scientists may be able to make humans resistant to all known viruses, resurrect extinct species, including Neanderthals. And he says the rewards will be worth the risks. George Church's new book is called Regenesis, How Synthetic Biology Will Reinvent Nature and Ourselves. And George Church joins us now. Thanks so much for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So I just want to start out asking you just what is synthetic biology?
So synthetic biology is an intention to build a new edifice on basis of genetic engineering, which goes back to the 70s. This new one is much more aimed at being like other engineering disciplines with computer-aided design and hierarchical abstraction and safety and so forth.
And what's an example of synthetic biology where we can say, here it's being used today, there's actual products being created?
So some of the earliest products that we're seeing right now are fuels and chemicals made from carbon dioxide and light in companies like LS9 and Juul. And Amyris with artemisinin, it's a pharmaceutical used to fight malaria.
And another thing that you mentioned is plastic cups that are being created using bacteria. How does that work?
So you can make plastic for cups, for carpeting, for all sorts of things that has new properties that either biodegradable or more biocompatible, and they make what you normally would get from petroleum is made enzymatically. The proteins inside of the cells are designed and configured so that they can produce huge quantities of either the plastics or the precursors for the plastics.
And so do the cups are essentially grown into molds, or how does it work?
The molding is usually done in a conventional way, although that could change in the future. The beauty of synthetic biology is there really are no limits. But right now, most of the emphasis is on making the monomers, so-called, for the polymers. So the plastic is made of long chains of a particular kind of unit.
And how long does it take to grow a cup?
Well, okay, so – if you think of wood as a kind of a polymer, that might take 20 years to grow a tree. Some of these bacteria have doubling times between 20 minutes and 2 hours. So those are kind of gives you an idea of how much faster things can go.
Harvard biologist George Church is with us. His new book is called Regenesis, How Synthetic Biology Will Reinvent Nature and Ourselves. You also write about the environmental benefits of growing cups out of bacteria. What are them? What are some of the benefits?
Well, some of the benefits, for plastics and other chemicals, is by reducing our dependence on petrochemicals, some of which are quite damaging to the environment, just to pull out of the ground or if we burn them. The alternative now is taking carbon dioxide out of the air, which is a positive, and then turning it into these compounds that are not intended to turn back into carbon dioxide.
So what do you think this could mean for the future? I mean, what are the implications of this research, do you think, for future science?
So already these organisms are like 100 times more efficient than, say, corn ethanol. And going forward, there's almost no field of manufacturing that you can't imagine being impacted. Now, imagination and delivery are different things, but this could range from electronics to medicine to all sorts of new materials.
You actually say it might be possible someday to grow a house, essentially, and it wouldn't be any more difficult than it would be to plant a seed to grow a tree. How do you think, or why do you think that's possible?
Well, so a tree is a very sophisticated construct. It's atomically precise and gigantic at the same time. There are very few things that we manufacture that cover that range. The rules for making three-dimensional structures are becoming more and more evident, and we can design these in computer the way we would cars and houses. Our knowledge of synthetic biology is is growing exponentially.
How much do we know about like how DNA determines the shape of things? We know what DNA says. We know what the code says. But how do we know about how it creates the shape?
So we certainly don't know everything about what DNA does. Some of the more marvelous things we are still learning. But what synthetic biology is the exercise of leveraging what you do know, just in the same sense that we make computers not out of all the elements of the periodic table, just out of a few that we're very comfortable with, like silicon. So, for example, DNA makes shapes that are incredibly predictable and atomically precise by using so-called Watson-Crick base pairing rules. And so just there's where we can use DNA not as an instructional material, but as instructional, but as structural. So there are other things where we basically leverage the evolutionary legacy, this wonderful gift of very complicated structures where we barely change them to a new use.
Harvard biologist George Church is here talking about his new book, looking at the emerging field of synthetic biology. And one of the things that you talk about that's controversial, perhaps, is this possibility of resurrecting extinct species from woolly mammoths to Neanderthals. How would you go about resurrecting a Neanderthal?
Well, so the process of resurrection is becoming quite common. The simplest and most dramatic was the 1918 flu virus, which I think is even more controversial. I was not involved in that. We have a Revive and Restore project, which is now international, and the way you would go about it is depends on the species. For some, you have a frozen sample where you can rescue, say, the nucleus from the center of the cell and put it into a living species. Other cases, you have to determine the DNA from little fragments that might be in a museum specimen and then reprint them using modern synthetic procedures.
George Church is here. He's talking about his new book, Regenesis, How Synthetic Biology Will Reinvent Nature and Ourselves. What are the risks of, creating Neanderthals?
So I think even if we say that the benefits outweigh the risks for many applications of synthetic biology, we do need to focus on the risks. And that's why it's important to talk about the things years in advance of when we think they might arrive, because they're arriving faster than we expected. For Neanderthals, the primary risks are the risks of any new medical procedure, whether it's a in vitro fertilization, which was risky at one point, is now routine. Cloning is risky now, and before it would get into common use, it would have to go through the same and maybe even higher scrutiny than FDA applies to new drugs, and then Neanderthals would fall into the category of a variety of new genetic tools on top of in vitro fertilization and cloning.
So they're not human, but what about just would Neanderthals want to be resurrected? Or is that an ethical question we have to ask?
I think they probably are quite human. They actually had a larger brain size than we have. They could be smarter than we are. I think whether they want to be resurrected will be an individual decision, not a group decision, and it will depend on how healthy they are. And so I think before we do this, we will be very, very good at working with existing humans.
George Church is here. He's a Harvard biologist, and his new book is about the emerging field of synthetic biology. You also say that it would be possible to resurrect a woolly mammoth using some of the same techniques, basically?
Right. The mammoth is a good example because we actually have an environment. This interacts with an environmental crisis. The huge chunk of the Earth is tundra, and it's melting because they don't have the large footprints bringing the cold air down into the permafrost every winter. And so the mammoths only recently became extinct due to humans, and they used to maintain grasslands, which have a very bright albedo, meaning relative to forest, which is the alternative. So the mammoths would crush the forest and would enhance the grass, which was better both winter and summer for their reflectance of the light.
George Church is a professor of genetics at Harvard University, and in your book about synthetic biology, you also say that humans could become one day much more resistant to viruses, maybe completely resistant to viruses. How is that possible?
Well, this is an interesting early application of genome engineering is to making cells, not human cells, but industrial, at least significant cells, resistant to all viruses. And the one thing that all viruses have in common, they're very different in many ways. They bind to the cells in different ways and so on. What they have in common is that they expect a certain genetic code inside the cell that translates from their DNA to RNA to protein. And so if you can swap things around to in a way that doesn't hurt the cell, when the virus comes in, it's completely flummoxed as to what's going on. And it's so radically different from the virus's standpoint that it can't even develop resistance.
So if this happens, if this were to happen, what would it mean? Would people be able to live forever?
Viruses are only one of the things that we face. This will first be in industrial organisms. If we were resistant to all pathogens, meaning bacteria and fungi as well as viruses, we might be able to lower some of our immune defenses, which would maybe result in less inflammation and less autoimmunity. But really to get at immortality requires a much more fundamental reexamination of many things that are historical evolutionary baggage in our genome.
Including aging.
Aging is not just us overreacting to our environment. That's right. There's a lot of things probably to be fixed.
So again, I mean, I can hear people out there scratching their heads or maybe screaming at the radio saying, you know, this guy's talking about playing God. What's your reaction to that?
We're not. We're just doing our job, which is to be engineers, which humans have been doing more or less since the beginning of humanity, is engineering their environment. And I think as a whole, we're being more and more responsible as we go forward, and that's highly desirable.
What could go wrong if we are kind of messing with the genetic code? I mean, what are the risks of this kind of research?
Well, I think it's very important to address risks, and there are risks for doing nothing because we now have a gigantic, 7 billion population, and so we have to assess. It's all relative risks. What can go wrong is ranging from the sort of things that go wrong with invasive species. So you need to make sure that your organisms and a large fraction of what we do in my laboratory is aimed at safety and security. Is make sure the organisms have a metabolic need that only the laboratory can satisfy, and that they can't exchange material, genetic material, with the environment.
Another thing you write about is the possibility of creating radiation-resistant humans or radiation resistance in humans. How would you go about doing that?
Well, so there are a variety of flies and beetles which are resistant to desiccation, freezing, radiation. These are pretty advanced animals. A lot of what we can and can't do as a species is based on historical artifacts, just the particular path we took to getting to where we are. If we had taken the path of some of these other animals, we would have gotten a different. So we're basically looking to those animals that are radiation resistant for hints as to what we would do, what genes we would import, probably initially again into cells. But as we think more and more about space travel to avoid catastrophic risks here on Earth, we're going to have to face some of these issues.
So to travel into space, we'd have to deal with the question of radiation?
Right. I mean, there may be physics solutions and there may be biological solutions or various combinations.
George Church, the professor of Harvard, and his new book is called Regenesis. You also write about something in this book. It's basically that people are experimenting now with synthetic biology in their garages, including a guy here in Seattle who's starting to do this. How is that possible?
Well, so this is some people, including myself, make analogies to the start of the electronics and computer industry in garages like Steve Jobs and Woz with Apple. I don't know whether it's completely analogous, but certainly the technology has been improving even faster than electronics, which kind of goes at 1.5-fold per year exponentially. Well, DNA reading and writing and biology reading and writing has been going about 5 to 10-fold per year, so it's going even faster. So it suddenly it becomes feasible. But again, we need to encourage responsible use of do-it-yourself activities.
What kinds of things can people do in their garages? I mean, presumably not resurrect Neanderthals, but you know, what's possible today?
Well, they can certainly, in principle, they could sequence ancient DNA. They have to be very clean about it. They can sequence their own DNA. They can determine whether they're at risk for one disease that their family might have, or many diseases, and then they can do kind of a souped up version of gardening. You know, where you might breed plants. Here you don't have to breed them, which takes a long time. You can go directly to the DNA. And there are many other things that can be done.
George Church's new book is called Regenesis. He's a professor of genetics at Harvard University who started the Personal Genome Project. Some of the more science fiction-y stuff that you raise towards the end of the book, a lot of it will probably sound science fiction-y to people, but some of the more science fiction-y questions you ask is, one of them is, you know, are we going to become a new species in the future? And what's your answer to that question?
Well, I think, our species isn't quite as meaningful as it used to be. It's not because we're not evolving. We're evolving faster than ever before, but our evolution is not just limited to DNA. It's also includes our culture and our technology and so forth. Speciation typically means that we have trouble breeding with other humans in this case. I think that's unlikely. If anything, what we're doing is we're aggregating a super species where we can take in parts from other organisms more readily, and in fact, even inorganic parts, so the way the hermit crab does. It's our cultural and technological parts, if you will.
I want to end by asking you kind of what your thoughts are about how likely some of this stuff is to occur, and kind of what the obstacles would be moving forward that you think need to be overcome.
Part of the reason that I talk about these things in advance is so that we could prepare ourselves so it doesn't become future shock, so that we have thought it through and thought of as many unintended consequences as possible. And the other thing is, it is occurring. Everything is arriving much faster than it used to, because the biology revolution is building on top of the very strong and exponential electronics and computer revolutions, and the information spreads so quickly too, and almost in a frictionless manner. So some of the things in the book described are already happening at full force. That people may not—they may sound like science fiction, but they're past tense. They've already happened. Other things, you know, it would have been the sort of thing that would have been 50 years out, but now because everything's so much faster, it might be only 10 years out.
All right. Well, thanks so much for telling us about a little bit of what's in this book.
Yeah, my pleasure.
George Church's new book is called Regenesis, How Synthetic Biology Will Reinvent Nature and Ourselves. Today's program was produced by Arwin Nix with Molly Williams. And Andy Hurst is our engineer. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm David Hyde.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.